This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3642 for Tuesday, the 19th of July, 2022. Today's show is entitled Interview with a Hacker, Vitaly. It is hosted by Operator and is about 99 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is, we go back, way back to golden days of hacking.
I'm here with Tally, and I don't remember your last name. What do we call you?
Tally K. Let's go with that.
That's easy. Yeah. It's got a lot of consonants, right?
Yep. Yeah, I usually try to avoid mentioning my last names, even when it's, you know, trying to get food picked up or something. Just go with the first name. That's usually enough, you know. It's unique enough.
Yeah. Well, let's start out with kind of how we know each other, where we met, and
Sure. Well, since I'm the one with the better memory, I guess, and as you mentioned, you don't remember too much of the good old days. So we met back in, I believe it was like 2012, when I that was my first internship out of college with the Big Four company, and I was a total noob that only had basic experience with like playing with VMs and, you know, just got my CH, which, you know, back in the time of, I think OSCP was still pretty new. That was kind of like the thing to go for, I guess, at the time.
Yeah.
I think the first encounter was first real like person, like physical like meeting, other than phone calls and meetings of that sort. I think it was in California, I believe. That's when we had our like engagement across the U.S. when we traveled and did a bunch of the locations for the same client, but they were located in like four different states.
Okay.
So that's, I think that was kind of, I guess, when we first met. But then I think the first, I guess before meeting in person, I think the first time I called you was actually on my first ever pen test, which was, I think our manager called it popping the cherry.
Nice.
You know, but that was even, I think I was still an intern, but either way, that was my first corporate level pen test. And I was stuck at, I got the first shell because there was default creds on the MySQL server. Totally remember that because it belonged to a security company.
Nice.
You know, the ones that do all the HID badges and stuff.
Nice.
And the password, just still to this day, I still remember it was SASA, and I was just like, yes. So I got the first
SA or blank,
and,
even.
Yeah, dude, that still works. And I got on the box. It was like a 2003 server or 2008 server or whatever, and I had like the difficulty of moving around, even though it was on the domain, because I had no experience with corporate networks. And somebody was like, yeah, dude, give Rob a call. I'm like, all right. And I get on the phone with you, and you're like, yeah, dude, just look at the tokens, the Windows tokens, and like the impersonation, delegation, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And this is you telling this to a guy who like never heard of Incognito and like didn't understand about Windows tokens and like Windows AD in general at the time. So that was my first like jumping into AD and like figuring out, you know, back in the day it was a little easier with Metasploit using Incognito, I think, but
yeah.
It was like, what are these tokens? And but yeah, to this day, man, dude, I still always look for that stuff where service account runs somewhere, you know, with enterprise or DA privileges, and it's a pretty good lateral movement strat to this day. I don't think a lot of people still rely on it because they use other tools that don't necessarily always look at tokens, but dude, tokens, that was my first ever pen test I've done, and that's how I got DA, because they ran a service account, and to this day, that's how I remember that story very clearly, you know.
Nice.
The time that I popped my pen test cherry with the help of Rob.
Yeah, I mean, I was in the same boat, too. Like, you know, I get, you know, a lot of people can get that first initial shell, but they don't know how to, you know, root and, you know, loot and pillage whatever host it is to get, you know, escalated privileges and or get credentials or whatever else is juicy on the computer and move from there. You know, be like, oh, I got access to this one machine and that's it. Like, no, like once you have access to one machine, like it's generally downhill from there, especially if it's admin access or escalated whatever. But
right.
I was the same way. I was like, you know, I have a shell, but I don't know what else to do. And they're like, oh, well, you can look at the PS tree and like inject yourself into any process that's like escalated or admin or like a domain. And that's when it's like, you know, I was finding out you could just, you know, inject yourself into a domain admin process. And then from a remote computer running as a domain admin, you can just add yourself as a domain admin, yep. Like just like that. And then very few, like once did I run into where you had to be on the domain controller to add a domain admin, which I thought was interesting. Because it was like, you cannot run that command remotely. And it's like, what? It's like, I had to like find the domain controller and I think take the credentials or the hash to the domain controller and then log in to the actual domain controller to run that command to create, you know, a new local admin or whatever. But yeah, there's always something fishy about, you know, however the, you know, network is set up or AD right. is set up to where you have to like do something different. And a lot of people just don't understand Windows enough to be able to move around or work around whatever, you know, security controls or AD, you know, OU policies that got pushed down that are like wonky.
Yeah. But, I think a lot of, sorry if I interrupted, but
no,
a fine. Lot of like, I think guys just start in the field. I mean, I can use myself even as an example. I mean, I did all the stuff that I could as basically, you know, play around with VMs, set up your own environment. And even nowadays, I think people have that difficulty of, I guess, like picking up skills and mostly what I would consider like Windows AD related. I think on Mac, it's more like LDAP and whatever other variants that they use, but it's mostly LDAP and AD, which AD incorporates LDAP, but I think everybody has that knowledge of like getting that shell, and then, you know, that's how CTFs work, that's how even OSCP works. I don't know, I think it's been updated to include some of that lateral movement stuff, but I think back in like a few years ago, it was still just very focused on like, okay, get this web shell, you know, get this system shell, however you got that shell, that's the key, and it is important, you know, that's how you get your entryways in a lot of environments. You find Jenkins, you find Tomcat, and you get that first shell uploaded, cool, you're on the domain box somewhere, all right, but what do you do next? And that's, I think, a lot of people always like struggle with that. And there's definitely been recently that I've seen like more trainings in terms of AD from like Pentester Academy and some other places where they literally pop you into an environment and show you how to, you know, abuse Windows ACLs for permissions, do the Kerberos thing, the ASP roasting, all kinds of different attacks, whether it's LDAP or Kerberos related or AD permissions and all that cool stuff. So I, like a few months ago, I took one just as a refresher just to see if there's, you know, anything else that came up that was new. And I think one of the areas that I still find myself that I haven't used a lot in my pen testing days was like ACL permission abuse. When you're in certain groups and stuff like that, you can do certain things. Like, I know there's like a DNS-related group that you can escalate through and stuff like that, but I just didn't have a lot of hands-on experience, and I think that's what I think helps people kind of solidify their skills is just doing it, you know, just going and yeah. doing it. Whether it's in your own environment, it's good, but like actual production environments, it's not exactly a playground, but, you know, it's definitely learning / proving grounds for you of testing out methodologies.
That's really the only way to really learn it. Like there's no lab that has every possible combination
exactly.
of misfit networks. Like they're all wackadoo, you know, there's always some weird control somewhere and then something else is completely wide open, you know.
Yep.
It's like a big mansion with like a million doors and windows, and like some of them are locked and some of them are open and some of them, you know, you can open it with a paperclip, and it's like, why? Like, why is this door over here like super secure and like fingerprint locked 2FA? And then like 2 feet away in the same room, there's a door that it's like you can open with a paperclip. It's like, so yeah, you know, seeing those connections like between how you can work around some kind of controls is like that's part of how you learn and all that. But so what about like, where'd you go to school? Like, hometown? Sure, like, your family influences?
So, I'm actually... I immigrated to the U.S. in 2002 from Ukraine. So, I was born there in 1990. So, gonna hit 30 this month. So, woo! I know, right?
It's I got 10 on you.
From the 20. Ah, dude. I'm catching up. We're all catching up, you know. We'll all get to the same point eventually. But so I moved here in 2002, and I've been living kind of like in the Philadelphia in a suburb area, I guess, since. Mostly live in Philly until about 5 years ago, where I, you know, I'm not a huge on the city of, in terms of parking and noise and all that good stuff. So I'm more of a burbs guy because it's quiet, it's green, it's nice. Even though I'm not a nature person, I kind of just enjoy the peace and quiet that's outside. Okay. And I never have to worry about parking. So I went to the local middle school, Baldy Middle School, then George Washington High School. Again, if anyone listens that ever went there, woo! But after that, I was kind of, you know, interested in IT in general. In high school, I was like, hey, the only thing we had that was like close to IT-related stuff was kind of web design, and I would say just basic programming courses,
yeah,
right?
So yeah.
I was like, sweet. I took those, and I'm like, listen, I look at people, and I'm like, what do I want to do for a living? And I was like, I definitely don't feel like I'm interactive, well, quote-unquote interactive with just like general population, so I'm not good with like math stuff, so definitely not accounting or finance. Yeah, you know, I like history, but that's not really going to make you money. So I'm like, you know, IT seems like, you know, I can, you know, stay behind the screen and do all my stuff and, you know, deal with switches or whatever, deal with just hardware instead of people. I felt like that was kind of like my appropriate for me, you know, avoiding people for the most part. So I, when I was going to looking at colleges, I was looking for just IT programs in general, but I wanted to go to like not a, I guess, a vocational school or a technical college. That was kind of like the backup. I want to go to a regular one just to kind of have the more, I guess my idea was just to get like a more known brand, quote unquote, diploma, if that makes sense. But just basically something like, oh, you went to the school, like, oh, I've at least heard of it, you know. So I in the end, I got some acceptances, but I picked Penn State just because they gave me a pretty good like financial package deal. And I was like, cool, you know, and it's located in, you know, the middle of Pennsylvania, so it's a pretty nice place, and I decided that I wanted to kind of like get away from home and just live like away for a few years on campus. And as I accepted, I got actually accepted, I believe, into CompSci program because I didn't do my research well enough, and I didn't realize that they had a separate program for information sciences and technology with different majors, including one that was specific for security.
Oh wow! Before, when was this?
This was 2009.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're starting to see stuff like that start to pop up.
Yeah.
Now, did you move? Were you in Philly for your, with your parents' work, or why were you there?
Oh, so we moved to Philly because some of my family actually lives on the East Coast, and some lives on the West Coast. So originally, when we were moving, my West Coast family filed all like the paperwork, so it was my dad's side of the family. And before that happened, while that was all going on, my sister moved here with her husband because his family lived here. And when we were moving at the time, my mom was like, hey, she just had a kid and, you know, she wanted to help. So she moved to the East Coast instead of the West Coast. You know, I kind of regret that decision to this day a little bit, you know, a little bit salty about it. But my family still lives on the West Coast for the most part, like Washington and California, and then some of, I guess, a more extended family lives on the East Coast. But we ended up here just because of my sister, quote-unquote.
Okay.
Before I started the semester, I kind of looked at my coursework, and I was like, there's no way I'm taking these courses, because there were, like, physics and calc and stuff, and I was like, this is not what I signed up for. Like, I honestly wanted to have more, like, technical courses and less of these, you know, more conceptual stuff that I don't think I would find useful in everyday, like, work life. So I looked around, and I was like, okay, IST, like, what do they do? And they had two programs, which was general IT stuff, which had like different tracks, which is like project management, more business or development track, and then they had security and risk analysis, which was pretty cool program. Again, not exactly the way I would envision it, but for the time, I thought it was, you know, it was pretty good for what it was, right?
Yeah.
And it was hard to find those types of programs back in the day, so hopefully that changes over time since we kind of lack people in the industry. according to the news, you know, there's not enough people. So I saw the opportunity. And I was like, okay, security and risk analysis. I'm like, I honestly don't remember how I heard that pen testing was a job. But I was like, wait a minute, you get paid to hack into places legitimately. Like, they give you, like, you know, get out of jail free card and you get to hack. Like, have fun on their environment, basically at their own expense, and you get paid. Basically what I found out was, yeah. And I was like, wow, sign me up. So I picked the cybersecurity stuff because I was like, man, that does sound cool. And I deal mostly with computers. I didn't realize, you know, beforehand that I'll kind of enter through consulting, which is more client-facing. But I feel like if you're talking about kind of like what you're interested in and your area of expertise is not that, you know, hard to do. Even as you progress, like even initially when I was like the consultant for the first year, I mean, I didn't find it like too stressful. I mean, initially, yes, because you're like the young kid and everyone's like, hey, you know, do you actually know your stuff? But if it's like something you're passionate about and like you, that's kind of like what you play around with all the time, you know, and learn all this stuff, it's like, yeah, I can speak comfortably to it. You know, I'm not afraid to voice my opinions or disagree on certain things.
So were you still in school when you were with me, or had you finished?
Yeah, dude, when I interned, I was still.
You were interned, okay.
Yeah, I interned. That was when I first. That's pretty met awesome. You. That was That was 2012. I interned, and then 2013 I started full time.
That's awesome.
But yeah, that was the first meeting was in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
That's a good way to get in. You know, I had to do, you know, well, that was before IT or before security started getting popular. So it was like there wasn't really a security role. It was more like you were IT or like a network admin, and that was pen tester.
At a help desk.
Yeah, there was no like pen test. It was like either help desk or you were IT admin. It was like, well, yeah, I'm IT admin, but I'm also like know everything about, you know, how to keep a system from taking a shit. And that's really kind of how it all turned out, right? Like, you know, you start out in IT and, you know, that's what I tell people is when they ask questions, they say, you know, oh, what do I do? It's like, well, you basically it's IT and help desk, but backwards. So instead of trying to fix stuff and trying to fix AD or trying to fix this, he's like, you're trying to unfix it and make it so it's supposed to do stuff that you don't want it to do or it's not intended to do. So, but yeah, that's pretty good that you were able to, you know, get that opportunity and then extend from there and just say, boom, I'm done. Like I've done consulting and whatever, and you can move from there. But so like, were your parents like supportive or were you just kind of on your own or?
I mean, I think to this day, if anybody asks my family, what does Vitaly do? They're going to be like, he does computer things,
computer,
you know, security
things. Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah. Computer things. I mean, I clarified it a little bit for them. I think at one point my sister thought what I was doing was illegal. So she was actually scared a little bit until I kept explaining to her. I'm like, don't worry. They like sign papers. This is like legit work, you know. She doesn't understand. She's like an artsy type person. So it, like, you know,
my she first is, was she like, an older yeah, sister? Or?
Yeah, dude. I have three older sisters. I'm the youngest one. So
So if you're young, they forgot about you. Your parents forgot about you anyway. So like, the last one's always the one. They're like, I'll be fine.
Yeah, he's
they let you
the
play with the light sockets and stuff.
Yeah, they're kind of just like. I mean, they couldn't help much once we moved. So, like, when I was a kid in elementary school, yeah, they can, you know, help out with schoolwork and stuff. But, like, once we moved to the U.S., they're, you know, they're supporting financially, of course. They're trying to do their best with that part. But I don't think they could help me with, you know, determining my college or any of that stuff. Yeah. Like, they're, you know, they were closer to retirement age at that point. So,
yeah,
it's like, yeah, I'm not going to expect you to, you know, help me out with that stuff. So I kind of just took my own thing. I'm like, you know, that sounds like a good career opportunity because I like this stuff. Plus, it seems to be like a fairly lucrative field. So I think a lot of times nowadays, a lot of people just choose it because it is a lucrative field. And that's kind of annoying because you run into people that are like, quote unquote, you know, potatoes.
They pretend they're passionate, but they're not really.
It's like you can actually like kind of sense it, you know, because you talk about stuff and you're just like, you know, it's like, oh, okay, all right.
You're not really
there. It's not that I blame them for it, you know, like everybody needs a job, so I don't blame them, but it's hard to like have, you know, peers that you can kind of just like bounce ideas off of and stuff. They just kind of do, you know, the 9-to-5 type of deal, so they're not like the hooded people awake at 3 a.m., you know, the type of those guys. Those are the
well,
guys
that's the, you know, when I was working, companies. Doing management for a little while, it was that same sort of thing. I started to realize, you know, there's like 2% of the population is that one that will, you know, lose time and stay up till 4 a.m, like messing with something security wise. Yeah, and then there's like
driver next working.
Yeah. There's like your 9-to-5 person that like knows what they're doing, but they do it 9-to-5. And then there's your like person that says that they're passionate about something and they're interested about doing whatever it is, but they don't take it home and they don't, you know, go above and beyond. So they're just kind of like 9-to-5, but they try to be like they're going to do something else. Yeah. And then you've got your, you know, your 9-to-5 people. And then they, you know, their passion and their hobby is some of their hobby is to do this type of stuff and learn new things and teach people new stuff. So like, how did you find out about the KPMG position? Was it from cold field or did you just know somebody or?
So, again, I'm not the most, social person in terms of going out to places like bars or meetup events of any sort. But I believe they had these like career fair type opportunities in college, which I would always, you know, encourage anybody who is, you know, open to that to go to those. You don't necessarily maybe find what you're looking for, but you definitely get experience of talking to people and just kind of get feelers out there. What type of opportunities are out there and then run into random people. So I actually just ran into one person I talked to and, you know, I was like, oh, okay, KPMG, whatever. Like, they didn't say anything about security to me. So I was like, cool, probably not going to be interested. And then I learned through actually my friend who interned there earlier, like, oh, yeah, they do have a security team. And like, at least I heard from this guy.
This one guy.
And, this guy.
Robert guy.
And I was like, wait a minute. And I was like, what does he look like? And he's like, oh, I think I saw him, but I didn't talk to him at the career fair. And they're like, oh, yeah, they're doing some event with like, I guess it was like at a food place or something, like just like a get together social thing. And I was like, yeah, you should come and talk to him. So that's what I did. I ended up going, and he's like, yeah, we are actually hiring. And he was surprised that the person, like, that when I talked to them, they're more looking for more, like, audit folks and, like, I guess not security, you know, related. And he's like, yeah, we totally are looking for at least, like, one or two people. And I was like, oh, cool, you know, like, sign me up, you know. So I believe it was Mark. His first name was Mark. I honestly don't remember the last name at this point. It's been a while. But he set up the interview, and he did quiz me quite a bit on, like, Metasploit and Nmap. Like, he asked me, like, you know, to this day, I remember, like, what would be the quietest type of Nmap scan? And, you know, most people would be, like, SYN scan. But actually, that's stealthiest in, like, what degree? You know, it's like... Yeah. Do I not want to be traced back? Then I was like, you know, that's what I would consider stealth, not the amount of noise it causes, like a SYN scan versus like a full scan. Yeah. So I was like, you know what, do it like a zombie idle scan. And the only reason I heard about that one is because I actually read like an Nmap cookbook thing.
Yeah, the whole cookbook, yeah.
Yeah, like the Metasploit intro book. Like, this was back in the day. I mean, Metasploit's still around, honestly. Like, you can still get your payloads like to connect back. It's a little bit trickier with like modern AV and EDR, but still works, because definitely proved it a few months ago with like forget what they were using. I'm not going to mention any products here, you know, to kind of shame them, but we totally ran like a meterpreter payload after we got the shell, like the initial access, and it was way easier to do certain things like incognito and on some of this other stuff that's like baked in, kind of like Cobalt Strike. But I guess if you're looking at more open source, then Metasploit's your kind of go-to still, more or less, outside of like Empire and some of the other C2s.
Yeah, he's actually had a post. I don't know if he's fixed it or changed it, but people kept taking, you know, pirating his software and then selling it, you know, reselling it.
Yeah, Cobalt. Yeah.
Yeah, so he did the Mudge, I guess it's Raphael Mudge, just writes it, or at least back then it was mostly him. And he wrote like a blog post on how to pirate his own software, which I thought was pretty commendable.
Well, it's missing. So if you don't have the legit license, you can't get certain features for it, which are like the important, like malleable C2 profiles and all that good stuff. I think it doesn't work
if it's the free one. Yeah.
Yeah, or even the cracked one. If you crack it, like you can't download whatever those additional things that are highly useful for like red team operators, which is, I guess that's what it's mostly used for. But I mean, dude, it still works. I mean, crack stuff still works. But yeah, I totally remember the blog that he posted. It's like, yeah, here. And don't forget, people can backdoor that stuff too. So when you run your OC2, you know, you might be popped already. So it's always always use your noodle before using cracked software.
Nice. Let's see. What are some other... Just going through the list here. What is a story that you can tell of your either like a hacking story or even just an IT story in general?
Hacking story.
I mean, it doesn't have to be with me. You probably have better stories since you started.
Dude, I got a few examples. I think the best one for people who are not in the field is like, you know, your typical like if you've seen Mr. Robot, right? That's probably the better example, like the prison hacking scene. I don't know if you've seen that show, but they did it over like Bluetooth or whatever. Like he hijacked the dude's laptop and then he did all this fancy stuff. The closest thing of a hacking story that I can tell people in terms of like movie level shenanigans is I was in Chicago. This was probably circa 2015, 2017, somewhere there. And I had this client that we were supposed to test the physical security as well, but they looked pretty like locked down. I couldn't easily piggyback, and I was like, you know, let me see what can I do from the outside. So I pulled up in the rental car and I parked right outside the windows of like the cubicles, right? And what I had on me was all my wireless gear, which was, you know, the alpha cards from the good old days, all the other cards that do the packet injection and all that stuff. So I was trying to get in on the Wi-Fi to see if I can in any way try to get in, do some of that stuff before I do the physical and try to do the internal, you know, the usual pen test shenanigans. So I was like, you know, let's make it more interested. So I pulled up in my car, set up my Wi-Fi stuff, but I also had, I don't know if you heard of MouseJack, the thing that hijacks your the HID receiver stuff. Yeah, so I had two of those, plugged those in, and just started scanning in the background, and it found a couple. I believe it was like one Logitech device and one Microsoft device that I looked up, and they're like, okay, these are vulnerable.
Yeah,
but I don't know what devices they're connected to, but I assume Windows, you know, like most corporate stuff. However, it doesn't matter because it works on Linux, Mac, or Windows. You just have to make sure your payloads
are good. Yeah.
So what happened was I set a payload to do a reverse like Empire shell to me, to one of our like C2 things, and I just hit it, and I was like, boop. And what I got was actually one of the IT guys' computers, his desktop, executed that stuff while he was like
away.
He was away, but his screen wasn't locked. Like, he was still logged in because he was, like, in an enclosed office, so he didn't feel the need to lock his screen because he wasn't in, a public space. So it executed, and I got a shell back, and I'm like, who am I? And it's like, oh, that's, like, an IT guy.
Well, Gladman, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sitting in my car, basically, and that's how I popped him, was literally through his, like, mouse receiver. I think he had, like, a Logitech mouse at the time. And I was able to actually do some of recon and actually do some of the escalation just sitting in my car, but then I kind of had to go in and kind of introduce myself because it was like time, you know, for a meeting. And I was like, hey guys, so I'm actually on your network already. What? I was like, yeah, I was sitting in the car. I actually popped one of your computers and we actually tracked it back to one of the guys. It wasn't our contact, but it was like one of the IT guys. And he was just like, what? You did what? But it was always a fun experience. Like, I always have fun, like, just explaining it. I'm like, try to put it in simple terms. Like, yeah, there's a flaw that basically, like, I can emulate, like, a keyboard input, basically, and send it over. And it's just going to try to do what the keyboard functions do on your machine without you, right? It's just signal. And it was kind of cool to just showcase some of this stuff because it's not necessarily, you know, like, oh, it's a high-risk finding. But, you know, for me, it was like, hey, this is just... If I'm in the area, you know, like I can't be a remote attacker. I have to be at least within the vicinity of this, like kind of like for wireless, I have to be there. But it was totally cool. Cause just, you know, and the Mr. Robot scene where they broke into the prison, it was like kind of same type of feel. I just pulled up in the car, popped the corporate stuff, and was able to kind of gain access, persistence, and lateral movement just by sitting in my car outside. which was really fun. I mean, you can do the same things through Wi-Fi, but this was slightly different and just kind of more interesting to kind of explain to them. And they were like, just like, what? And to top that off, towards the end of the engagement, for the physical, I cloned their badges. So I was just standing out there, like, hanging out, pretending to be on the phone. And I got, like, two employees, I think, that were close enough because I had one of those giant cloners that are, like, just put it in one of those messenger bags.
Okay, yeah.
And just kind of...
walk next to somebody, yeah.
Yep.
Did you buy the, whatever it's called, Proxmox 3 or whatever?
So I do have Proxmox, but I don't use that.
Is it build your own?
Yeah, I use the build your own thing, so that has higher range. Proxmox is useful for actually building this, like, we're dumping the data and, like, writing it, but... Yeah. Definitely, the big thing was like the range was what gave me most of the success. And I was explaining that, and he's like, "Hey, can you actually clone a card for his dad? Because his dad lives in an apartment complex where they charge you $100 to make a copy of a freaking like fob key."
Huh.
And I was like, "Okay, yeah, I have like some blank fobs. Cards. You can buy them in bulk, right?" I was like, "Cool, yeah, let me try." I mean, I don't know if it's gonna work, but I gave it a shot. I gave him like. He has like two or three copies, you know, see if it works. And like before I left, he's like, "Yeah, dude, totally works. So you just saved like $300 for my dad." I was like, "Sweet." So just like knowing the little things, like, you know, they're charging you for a freaking HID, like cloning, like access key. You can actually just make a copy for yourself, save some money. I mean, I think the supplies for it to make a copy are not like, that difficult. They sell like the little devices that are like, I don't know, like $50. You don't even need a Proxmox, I think, nowadays. Like they sell like little portable like read and then write. So as long as you have write-up.
I'm sure it's all kind of commoditized and a lot cheaper now.
Yeah.
Like, sure, even the USB duckies I've been buying these little $2.50. Like USB duckies. Nice. So if you do like it's on Hackaday. And you just Google, like, I don't know, USB ducky DIY or something. So instead of paying the $30 or whatever for the ducky, you just buy these, like, $3 little $3 things that will do basically the same thing, but it's through Arduino. And you have to, like, re-encode it using, like, this ducky to Arduino payload encoder thing. But so I get a bunch of those. I've got a bunch of those, and I was going to hand them out. During the class, but that was before COVID hit and everything went to shit. But yeah, that's pretty fun. I've had a similar experience with a client that like kind of didn't want me there yet, and my management didn't notify that particular site that I was going to be there. So they're like, "Yo, you can't be here." And I was even waiting in the waiting room, and they're like the hallway, and they're like, "Oh no, you have to like leave the building." So they ejected me like from the building, and I did the same similar stuff. I was kind of rummaging around the Wi-Fi, and I had gotten access to an old network that didn't have anything on it. It was like a legacy network that was using the old style keys, the
web,
the web crap. And there was some stuff on there, but there was nothing to like pivot to on that network. It was all just like. Itself, and it was like a few other devices that weren't like on the domain or anything. And then like 2 or 3 days later, I'm still on site trying to wait for the okay from the client to be there. And she calls me back and she's like, "Yeah, I'm still just, you know, I have some concerns about you walking around our facility, blah, blah, blah." And I was like, "Well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, I do this for a living. I don't actually physically have to be there. I can just do it from the parking lot. That's kind of my job. So like, if you want, I can just keep doing the work from the parking lot and let the client know and the stakeholders know that, you know, you weren't able to, you know, let me in the building because you were nervous about it or whatever," which, you know, on to her point, like, you know, some guy comes out of left field and she has no idea. Nobody told him he was going to be there. I'd be the same way. I'd be, you know, whatever. She's just doing her job. Right. But same kind of thing where I was like kind of rummaging around without their permission from just the parking lot and outside the building. Let's see. Current projects, work or personal, doesn't have to be IT related. So you talk about playing around with CrowdStrike a little bit, and you're pretty heavily involved in Carbon Black Response still. So like, you got any other interesting projects?
Yes, I do. So I would say, I mean, for kind of my Zen period of like not doing much, I probably just do Plex stuff. So the media server, I mean, that's, you actually got me into it as well when I met you back in the, back in like 2013. So nice. Thank you for that, because I'm a huge fan of it. And I built my own media library with like all the security videos from all the cons, along with, you know, obtain media from the internet. It's grew to like about, I think, almost 100 terabytes in size at this point. So I'm looking to upgrade it to a server chassis, because I can't accommodate any more drives in the old case. So that's kind of, I kind of like clean it up and do some storage configuration, that type of stuff. It's just like to relax type of thing for me. I don't know. I think a lot of people do other better things, but to me, it's just to dry some things and clean up some things. I don't know. It's like cleaning is like procrastination, quote unquote, thing for me somehow. I don't know.
Hold on, you're kind of chopping up. Hold on.
It's like a relaxing thing. Yep, no problem.
Oh, hold on. Can you hear me? You good? Testies? It might be me. I don't know.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, you're good now, more or less. Say something.
More or less? Yeah. Yep. Hello? Test 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
It might just be a connection from Microsoft's infrastructure.
Yeah, they got like 15 million people on now. Maybe let me call back.
Degradation. Sure.
Yeah, let me call back. I lost my own link here. Sorry. Copy link address. There we go. Hello?
Welcome back. Any better?
Sounds like it. Yeah, no, I don't see or hear any choppiness.
Yeah, I didn't see any, like, signal errors or anything like that. Okay. Yeah, it's probably on the same thing. Want me to go over my project stuff?
Yeah. IT or non-IT related.
Yeah.
Either way.
So it's like half IT, half non-IT. So I'm hugely think my favorite area of it, like scoping out your target and like finding out info that's not always necessarily public, but it is there. Right. So having that in the background, there's a lot of breaches that happen, right? All the data dumps on the web, they kind of end up some places index them, some places sell access to the data as well. But after I took this one class with, I forget the gentleman's name, but he publishes a lot of books. I forget the guy's name, but he has a lot of books on Amazon. You can publicly obtain are a gold mine in terms of like trying to track people down. And because you can search for very, very interesting things in those data dumps. So you have the emails, usernames, passwords, and a lot of other stuff at time, IPs, date of birth, and all that good stuff, right? So what he did is he combined all these things in a pretty, you know, rudimentary way. He ended up as text files, and then he was using RipGrep, I believe, to do just grepping for things to find things, right? But what that got to my to what that caught my attention a little bit, because I was like, hey, I can use Elasticsearch and Kibana, so like an open source sim type of thing, basically, to import all these breaches, right? And actually do correlations. So if I find, let's say, a unique password, right, I want to see if there's any emails or usernames correlated to that specific password. So like reverse searching, not just by searching the email, but by searching the hashes or the passwords themselves or any other input points. And to that degree, you can also add a lot of like voting databases and other stuff, which contains people's names and numbers and addresses and stuff. So like you can build this like giant web of just for data mining. And I don't mean it in like any nefarious purposes necessarily, although you can use it for that. For any kind of recon that we do, I can always look at, you know, has this org, like, do the users in this org, have they been in data dumps before? Like, has there any of their creds have been compromised? Can I see what kind of creds they use? If we want to do phishing, you know, on the specific user, if you want to target a phishing attempt, you can kind of tailor it to them based on like, okay, they used this service before, right? They use Dropbox. Okay. We can customize it from Dropbox, you know, and stuff like that. So you can do a lot of cool digging up and kind of connecting the dots to see if the same person, if you're tracking down a person for whatever reason, you know, not recommending stalking anybody, but if you're tracking down someone, let's say, you know, somebody pissed you off online with a certain username, you're like, okay, who is this guy? You know, want to send him a nice worded email for the sake of the example.
Right, right.
How would you find this person, right? So these data dumps are really good. And not just by looking at the email. Again, you can track down unique passwords that are tied to other users. You can also track IPs tied to users depending on the data dumps and stuff like that. So it gives you like this basically web of just stuff that you can correlate to individual users or individuals, right? And that was like, yeah, you know, I want to be the freaking mini NSA here, you know. So that's my like current one that's kind of progressing slowly, because it takes a little bit of time to standardize the data before you kind of shove it into Elasticsearch.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wouldn't even consider it like more IT. It's more just like, hey, I'm interested in all these breaches, and I want this data to be mapped, and you can use it for all kinds of purposes, whether it's security related or just for funsies, like I do.
So, like, how much data? Because I know there's like the collection, yeah. There's like the collection two, which
terabytes
is two
and
big
terabytes.
Ones.
Yeah. Yeah, there's terabytes of it, and you can dedupe it and stuff, but like, it's it takes space.
Yeah.
So, like, my Plex server is like 100 terabytes. That thing is probably going to be like at least 25, 30 or more. Like, if you actually do all of them, and I mean, like, all of the public big ones, like, they add up over time. Like, you'll definitely need, like, at least 10 to start with, like, a good amount of them. Like, LinkedIn, Dropbox, you know, Ashley Madison, is it whatever it was called? Like, yeah. There's a lot, and they happen every day. So you just keep dumping them from different forums. You can, you know, if you want to spend some Bitcoin, you can get them on some of the markets that are still alive that the feds haven't taken down on Tor.
Yeah.
But again, most of the ones I find are still on like the forums, so you don't need to go on the dark web. Most of the stuff is literally floating on like non-English speaking forums, hint, hint, you know.
Yeah, or like...
speakers, and it helps.
Yeah, or like some torrent magnet link somewhere that gets published.
Yes, so you can find a lot of them also on like the Pirate Bay. I'm pretty sure it has them indexed for at least some of the bigger ones. Used to be a guy that published them on Twitter, but I think he kind of stopped because I think people were like annoying.
Somebody got after him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had what I was doing, like, there was like, it was like census before, it was census.io, but it's like census.io now. And for a while, when it first started out, it was all free. It was like basically, what's the one that, the internet scan database that everybody uses.
Shodan.
Yeah, it was like Shodan, but it's free, and it wasn't really geared towards necessarily like, here's all the webcams or whatever. It wasn't more.
Right.
It wasn't really the stunt hacky stuff that Shodan is. It was more of just like, here's all the top ports or whatever. But it was free. You just sign up for an account, and then you could get the links to the Google Drive, and they're like, you like I said, be like a terabyte or 2 or 3 terabytes for some of the big ones. And you could download them for free, and you could download it at ludicrous speeds because it's all on Google Drive stuff. So you could like multi-thread download these, basically build your own Shodan for free and at like ridiculous speeds. And I would do stuff like, once I got it, it would be like 3 or 4, you know, terabytes or whatever, or gigs. It'd be like 3 or 4 gigs of stuff. And then I would zip it up, basically use, what do you call it? SquashFS is what I was using to try to make, keep everything small. But apparently you can like mount BZip or something. You can, so there's like a BZip type of way you can mount. There's other ways to mount like higher compressed stuff. Let me get some messages here. Hold on.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. So let's see, what else? Where were we at? You were talking about kind of what stuff you've been playing around with. Now, yeah. What do you, have you been confronted by anybody like at work or personal that like around the legality of it and say, oh, well, you can't do that because it's illegal type of thing? Because I've had some clients say, you know, we've given them information about like some of the security issues they have from like public data. And I've heard people say that, oh, well, you know, you're not supposed to be looking at that stuff, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm like, well, it's public. It's basically public information. If I can get it, it's public information. So that means hanging everybody else knows what it is. So I'm just helping you. Like, you don't have to be, I'm not malicious about it. And if I were to be, you wouldn't know anyways. So who cares?
Right. Yeah. So as a consultant, I definitely experienced that where people don't always want to take, you know, they just don't want to fix things most of the time. That's why, like, they don't want the work, basically, right? Yeah. To, you tell them something's wrong, it's like, oh, why did you bring this up, right? You know, ignorance is bliss, right? But I feel like as an individual, right, if you were to report something, I think companies have gotten better with, especially with like bug bounties, like the crowdsource type ones, like HackerOne or what's the other one, BugCrowd. So you can definitely go through some like more legitimate channels to kind of be like 100% sure you'll get the response you're looking for. And when you're reporting things like, hey, you have, you know, your AWS bucket key is chilling on your GitHub account, or you have, I don't know, exposed Tomcat with default credentials, something silly, right? But there are places that are definitely going to have that shitty response of like, oh, that's illegal or something. And that's shitty, but it is reality, right? You will, excuse me, you will run into those here and there. They're not very common, I would say, but they do happen. And if they do, don't let that like discourage you from trying to help folks out, right? It's not like, don't report very silly things like, hey, you have, I don't even know what the silly thing would be. Like, it's an example of one of the like, all these, like, there's a lot of people that actually do submit some, like, you have, you know, port 3389 open, which is like RDP. It's like, yeah, you shouldn't have that, but like, that is not a direct like risk threat. Now, if you have stupid credentials on it, then yeah, it becomes an actual risk. But like, maybe you're missing a patch. Like, if you're missing a patch, depending on what the patch is, like, if you have Pulse Secure VPN exposed, right, and you have that RCE thing still on it, where anybody can get in and just get all the creds off of it. Yeah, if you report that, I feel like that's awesome. But if you report like, oh, you're missing like some silly patch that's like low risk, has nothing to do with anything, like, oh, you need to patch it, and you tell that someone, they'll be like, and that's why it's, some things get like diluted in value, right? If they get too many people telling them things, and they're like, you know, it's another crappy report. But in light of actually them looking at it, they might realize like, oh, it's actually, you know, I don't think they mean any harm. And I would say, you know, just if you want to be safe, just go through the legit like crowdsourced bug bounties type things, and you can get paid. Even if you don't, I mean, you'll help out folks and just submit them the reports. They at least will look through them, and you'll have like a man, quote unquote man in the middle, where you're not gonna get it goes through the service, right? So you're not like, you're not doing anything gray area type thing, you know.
there was a brief period where I had, you know, I had like a Tor set up where I had an email account and like an SMS phone number to do that type of stuff and like responsible disclosure, but I was doing it as anonymously as I could. And I did like two or three of them. And it's like one of them was substantial, like a substantial remote internet facing thing. But I never once got a response back from anybody. So I don't know if like I was doing it wrong or whatever. And I even asked somebody on a podcast about it. And they're like, oh, well, you know, disclose it to CERT and then CERT will take it and like, in theory, make the proper connections or whatever. But like, I never really got any like response back from any of those clowns. Like that, I guess it just, cause the way I do it is like, you know, I try to find like admin at whatever. And I just like bomb everybody that's on there or like send four or five emails to like four or five different random people. Cause you know, it's hard to find a contact for like to disclose security stuff. People don't even understand what IT is, much less IT security. So I guess that was probably most of what my problem was. Cause I never got a response like from anybody. Like if I saw something in my mailbox and I was like, you know, Jane the idiot and had no idea. And it's like said something about security and whatever. Like I would probably reach out to somebody and escalate, but I don't know.
At least but, forward it to the right source. But folks don't necessarily see that all the time.
I kind of gave up on it. And if it's something silly, I'll just put it on like full disclosure or whatever. And like, it'll be like something not like bad, like super bad. It'll be like, you know, how to get something that's either not this free or try to change something to make it better or whatever. But I've never really done anything like malicious or whatever. But usually the silly stuff I'll put on like full disclosure if it's something stupid, like how to get unlimited tokens for some dumb game or something. I just don't have the time for a lot of that anymore, you know. But yeah, you mentioned projects, you know, kind of your favorite projects are like the Plex stuff. Is most of the stuff you have on there like movies and TV, or like you said, is it what percentage of it is like what are your other favorite projects other than like Plex? Do you have any other favorites?
I guess again, project related is usually like tech related stuff. I mean, like the last time I've done anything hardware related has been a while, but it's just like you have to get a feel for it, you know. I haven't been working anything outside of those like data dump indexing and correlation.
Yeah.
And like Plex is kind of probably the only two things that I would consider projects, right? Yeah. Everything else is kind of just leisure activities that I wouldn't say like are hobbies, quote unquote. I mean, you can call them hobbies, like, you know, good old video games and some anime, you know.
Yeah. And you did, but, you did consulting for like, how long do you think you did consulting? Cause you were kind of doing it and then you got to switch, right?
Yeah. I did consulting for probably, I would say, 5 years, like solid 5 years.
Yeah, okay. That's about what I ended up with. Like, and when I started out, you know, those soft skills were the part. And that's one of my questions is, like, what are you not very good at? And you mentioned just, like, people and not being comfortable around, you know, people in general and just doing all that. And I think, you know, working for an accounting firm and doing like client facing stuff helped me pretty well in that area. Cause it's your job. You're forced to like talk to people and like, you know, really get an understanding of like, you know, it's not about just explaining the technical details around something and making it, you know, understandable. It's about like, okay, how does this person communicate? How do they communicate effectively? Like, what is, you know, they like phone calls or did they like in person or do they like whatever? And I learned a lot in those 6 years, like, you know, how to get people to at least like understand what you're saying and like care, and try to get them to care about what you're talking about. But, is there anything else you could say that you're not good at you would like to disclose?
Not good at. No, I mean, there's a lot of things I'm not good at. I mean, definitely not artistical or musical at all whatsoever. Tried to learn things here and there, but never worked out. I mean, all my art homework, I mean, I think it's been well enough past my school time that I can easily say that most of it my sister kind of drew for me. Nice. You know, anything art related, I'd be like, can you help? Because my stuff looks like it's just, you know, out of the nightmares. So, I'm definitely the analytical kind. I'm reserved, you know, personality, so not the outgoing type. Even though I can talk fairly easily about the topics that I know or to people that I know, but, like, I mean, I say hi to strangers, right? But working that consulting gig definitely helped me, like, break out of that shell and kind of
exactly
build up that what I would call like
kind of the rapport or just the soft skills. Yeah,
people call it soft skills, but to put it in like actual like words, I would say like I can talk to like the C-suite board people without a problem. I'm not gonna talk the same way, you know, as plainly as I do right now, but I don't use business like nonsense terms like, you know, everyone's favorite, you know, what's the synergy and all that crap, you know, like people use fancy words and stuff. Like I always kept, what I learned is like keeping things fairly simple helps it kind of get across different kind of audiences, right? So I don't try to tell them, you know, I don't throw like Cobalt Strike in their face, like, oh yeah, we use this software, right? Like use something simple that they can kind of understand, like helps you connect remote, you know, get a remote connection established instead of C2, right? So if you keep it simple and like keep things, you know, comfortable, I think that kind of helps just in interaction with kind of anybody. And I'm very open to explaining exactly what I'm doing at any point. Like they can shoulder surf me if they really care. You know, they're going to see a lot of just terminal commands, but if they're curious, they can always look. Like I learned to be very open during my consulting too. Just like, hey guys, like you want to see how this is done? Like this is a clone card, and I can like demo that. And
yeah,
it just helps like make it more just like easier to deal with instead of just, you know, being a very, you know, rigid kind of businessy approachy person.
Yeah, that industry in itself is kind of weird because like most of the people that are in, you know, in security or at least, you know, in heavy IT or security stuff, like they're, you generally want to be helpful. I don't know where it comes from, but like most people in IT or like in security kind of want to be helpful and want people to learn stuff and whatever. But it's like, it's
an uphill battle.
Counterintuitive. Yeah, it's counterintuitive because, you know, you try to teach people stuff and either they don't care or don't understand or don't want to know, or you know kind of they fear what they don't understand, quote, like, you know, they try to control it, and if they can't control it, then they make it go away. I mean, I've had, my previous employer was kind of that way, where, you know, you never got the warm fuzzies from them, and they never gave you the warm fuzzies, or you never gave them the warm fuzzies. So I felt like I was just like a threat to them the whole time I was working there. And like, you know, when you get hired to specifically do pen testing for an employer, like there's a certain level of trust that has to be there. And it's kind of one of those things where like it felt weird. And like I'm sitting there trying to establish relationships with people, and like everybody's very shifty and like, oh, what's Robert doing over there with that? You know, like you said, the console window, and like people kind of see that stuff, and they get, instead of asking questions, they just like, oh, they must be doing something bad or malicious or whatever. And I'm like, no, I mean, if I was going to do something malicious, it'd be, you know, from a yacht in Guam or whatever. Like, I'm not gonna do bad things sitting at my employer like an idiot. Like, that's how you end up in the news or whatever. But let's see, what else we got? Your favorite website? Do you have a favorite website? It's a cliche.
Let me think for a second. Like, I mean, I would. Honestly, I think the site that's open, like the tab that I would say that's open the most, is actually YouTube for me. And it's not necessarily like learning or entertainment specifically. I think it's a mix of everything. I mean, you can say about Twitter the same. It's like entertainment, but also like good bits of like tids and, you know, bits and pieces of stuff.
Yeah.
So I would say YouTube, just because I always have music playing like 24/7 basically whenever I'm doing it. Just helps me concentrate. It's been like that since like high school, I think, for me, and it just keeps going.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I like, if I'm working, I have to have music in the background. So I've been experimenting with Bandcamp, if you've messed with them before. So I got a bunch of stuff on my wish list from Bandcamp that I'll go through and buy, you know, if I get bored of music. So I blow through music like crazy. And Bandcamp's one of those kind of offbeat sites where you can find music that you like that's not like mainstream.
That's not stuff. On Spotify,
yeah.
That's why I'm using YouTube.
No.
Yeah, there's like all these mixes and stuff, and it's just
people
like,
just dump up there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like that it's not as like rigid as Spotify. I mean, like I used Spotify before, but I think YouTube is like 1 minute I'm like, I have music playing in one tab, but then I can open another one and like look up a tutorial for something. Like an example recently, like since COVID, I live in an apartment complex where they usually send people out, right, to fix things. But they're like, yeah, we only do emergency like maintenance now. And my toilet thing was flushing like on its own every like, I don't know, 15, 30 minutes.
Just like leaking,
yeah. Doing that noise. Yeah. I'm like, all right, how do I fix this? And they're like, could be a flap. Tried the flap, not the flap. Like, you're supposed to replace the seal or whatever.
Yep, yep.
I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I just ordered this stuff, watched the YouTube video, and went and fixed my toilet, you know? It's like, it's kind of like a learning platform, but also entertainment, and it's like nicely mixed. So again, similar to Twitter, but I kind of like usually try to stay off social media for sanity.
Yeah.
So.
Let's see what else we got here. On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you? That's a weird question.
It is a weird question, but if I had to put myself on a number, I would say like an 8. I don't think people like freak out when they see me. I am like 6'4", but I feel like that's probably the intimidating factor for people. But I'm like, yeah. I'm kind of like a anime loving person, so that kind of like, oh, what do you, I collect like figures and stuff, and mostly I have like weird music tastes. Like I can listen to like happy hardcore and nightcore and like just like super fast chipmunky sound stuff, but also like metal right next to something like, I don't even know, like it's very all over the place. Yeah. So
like my I'm the same way. I've got stuff all over, so I'll send you a few links to some different stuff that you might one's a gangster grass. It's the name. That's the name of the group. It's like gangster music and bluegrass mixed together. And then
sounds intense.
Yeah, a couple is several months ago. I got into I want to say it's, I don't know what it's called, but it's like the music that's in Vikings. I don't know what they. I'll have to look at the. What I actually call the playlist.
I don't know genres very well.
Let's see, playlist. Folk metal is what it's called. So it's like heavy metal, but it's like folk music, and they might have like weird instruments or like Mongolian throat singing or something in there. But I'll have to send you some of that. Future Wave, Dart Wave, Outrun, Retro Wave stuff.
Yeah.
Swing,
that stuff sounds
electro
good.
Swing type of stuff. My wife can't handle any of it. So she hates all of it. She's fine with listening to like Linkin Park from 2009 or whatever, 100 years ago. And I am like, oh my God, I can't listen to this song anymore. But that's what makes her happy.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I wear headphones because my wife would probably kill me if she had to listen to my music. I'd be like DJ Searle right next to some Visual K from like Japanese metal and be like, what? It's like, I don't know, the brain's happy, so here I am. Thanks, YouTube.
Tell me something that's true that almost nobody agrees with you on.
Something that's true that nobody agrees with me on. I would say, let's see, what do I... I would say, I think like people spend, what wouldn't people agree with me on? I feel like people spend like too much time like listening to the news and using social media. Like just cut it off, and I feel like you'd be a happier person. Like I have Facebook, right? And I used to have Twitter, I just kind of disabled it. Facebook I like rarely check just in case somebody messages me, but like you can read news, but like tailored news. Like I read like techie news and like futuristic development news, you know, all that good stuff. Like I like tech, so that kind of news. But like general, like just if you avoid everything, like the world becomes like a better place. Like you don't even know 2020 is going and like 2020 is going on, you know, like it's just like helps you just like relax and think about your own things.
Yeah, focus on what's important.
Because there's a lot of people I think that like they either have the need to check or the need to respond to people and comments everywhere. It's just like, guys, just forget this ever existed. Like, I kind of missed the early 2000s and, like, the 90s. Just felt like I was, like, happier as a kid just not having some of this stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the, like, what was the term I've heard? Doom scrolling, where, like, it's the COVID thing where you're just looking for stuff and you can't get enough input of all that mess. We don't have cable. We will watch Kathy will watch over the air stuff every once in a while. Yeah. And that's where I get my news, is from Kathy, or maybe if it bubbles up to, you know, something. I mean, I was actually on site at one point in time. This was when I was doing consulting years ago, and there was some hurricane coming through somewhere, and like they were talking about the name of it. And I was like, what? And whatever the name of that hurricane was. And I didn't even know what they were talking about, because I don't watch the news just because it's so toxic and just awful. Just
positive, like, news is rare.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's like they all operate on fear and all that silly stuff. And it's just like, look, I've seen it 1,000 times. It's the same thing over and over again. You know, not only is it just depressing, it's just boring, because you get the same story over and over again about somebody getting shot about something. So
yeah, so I feel like people would totally disagree with me that you should kind of, you know, like put your head in a hole, kind of like an ostrich or whatever kind of metaphor thing. But it's like, I'm not telling you like people to completely cut it off, but it like helps, man. It's like detox basically for people who are like just stuck to the computer. And I mean, I'm pretty stuck to the computer based on all I do. But I feel like we all deserve to just, like, even if you sit on the computer, hell, just watch some Netflix or whatever. Just go away from that stuff, and it kind of helps you just kind of clear up and just think about yourself, man. Think about your family. Just, you know, just get down to earth and just stop worrying about all these internet strangers or your internet friends or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I don't know the political whatever of the guy on Hacker Public Radio, but he... his name's Ahuka, A-H-U-K-A, and he'll do some interesting stuff around, like, COVID, and it's very, like, to me, it feels like it's less noise and more signal. So he'll, you know, every month or so, he'll put up a new podcast about COVID, and there's actually useful stuff in there. It's like, okay, if you want to follow these websites, these are, like, the dirty, you know, the meat of everything that's going on, instead of, like, people going fear and run around
circles. Fear-mongering and, Israel in 2020.
Yeah, so he helps kind of filter out some of that stuff. And he talks about health and stuff, healthcare and how all that stuff is a mess, and his thoughts and opinions. But it's for me, it's not like a political thing. It's more of like a, give me information about current events that's not like, you know, Fox News, for Christ's sake, or something. So like, just a mess.
Yeah. My opinion is that, like, we have so much information, I feel like it's hard to pick, like, what to focus on or what's good, you know? It's just an overload of data. Like, you just open up and it's just, like, endless scrolling of stuff, right? So I feel like we've gotten to that point where, we're just kind of almost, I would say, like, we take whatever's at the top kind of deal and not really dive into things like, oh, is this, you know, who posted, like, what's the source of this stuff? Like, we kind of don't really even check any of that. It's just kind of top post, you know, whatever's trending, whatever's people are talking about, the popular hashtags and all that good stuff. And it's just like, I don't know, just became kind of funny looking at it. Like, if you step away from it, it's like, it's kind of sad, but whatever, you know, just do what you got to do. But again, I would just recommend people, you know, especially this year, just kind of hang back from all that stuff. Like, just take it easy, man. Go do some home improvement. I know COVID kind of drove people to do that, you know. Focus on some other things. Just kind of step away.
I know you're doing the consulting stuff for like 5 years, and then you did some, like, you know, kind of red teamy pen test stuff, and now you're kind of on the defense side. And then you do the pen testy stuff kind of for your internal employer? Or so, like, would you say you're kind of moved from the red team / pen testy side to more of like the defense side, or are you just kind of all over the place?
So what happened was, back in like 2018, I think, I was like, hey, listen, guys, this is a benefit of working for a smaller company, is you kind of can interact with pretty much everyone, right? So I was like, hey, do you mind if I like rotate out of consulting? Like, I'm just kind of getting burned out by it, and I want to try a little bit helping you out on the other side of the house, which is your SIM platform, which includes basically the analysts and that team. And I was like, what I propose to you is that I can help you improve a lot of this stuff, because I know you guys have been trying to keep up with it, but like, I feel like my experience of just breaking all the things and how to get into places is going to be very useful in, you know, identifying our weak spots and kind of creating alerts around that. So that's how kind of I portrayed it, and they were totally on board with it because they didn't have anyone that was like kind of like dedicated to helping out with that stuff. They just had analysts, and then the developer and the maintenance team, I guess, were also helping out with alerts. So it was kind of just, there wasn't anybody dedicated in that role. So what I became is kind of like a little bit of everything. I my responsibilities do include helping out the blue team and creating some of these alerts. But that was kind of set for the kind of the start of the role. Later on, the role is a little bit more mixed. So once I'm done with kind of solidifying some of the alerting, and while I do that, most of it is based on OFSEC research, right? So yeah. I still play around and do training on red team stuff. I don't do blue team training because I think they're hilarious.
Backwards.
No offense right. to anybody.
It's a little backwards,
that, but like,
right?
Yes, you learn way better stuff on the offense because you understand exactly what's happening, all like all the AD weaknesses, like okay, Office 365 legacy protocols, like how do they attack it, okay, they use ruler, what does that look like, and you can test it out and you can test your defenses pretty easily, right, once you know how to do it. So that's my approach to it, is like understanding what do people attack, how do they attack it, and then focus our defenses and detection on that stuff for our clients. And that's kind of where
yeah.
I do the development, but I mostly do it through red teams learning and
yeah.
testing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's, I mean, it can take some time, but it sounds like you had the right amount of support and whatever to like get there pretty quickly to build out those signatures, at least within Carbon Black Response, that are actually, you know, trigger pretty useful
yeah.
stuff, right?
Yeah. It was a little bit of time to definitely, you have to, again, learn different things, right? As a, I guess, red team or pen test operator, dude, you are learning all the tools and TTPs, you know, tools, technique, procedures for getting in and getting out. Well, not getting out, but, you know, for persistence if you need that. But mostly it's just all about getting in. So when I came to the help out with the defense, I had to learn about, you know, okay, let's do an in-depth kind of analysis of our Windows logs. Like, what do we get? Where do we get all our logs shipped from? What kind of devices have that, and what kind of logs do we collect, right? Based on that, what can we identify? Can we identify stuff like curb roasting or anything like that? Cool, let's do alerting on that. You know, Office 365 logs, like what do they look like? You'd be surprised how much of documentation is lacking in 365. There's so many
yeah.
Responses or status codes that are not documented that it's hilarious for successful logins. Specifically, or it's failed logins. So there's like token blah or something mismatch, and like you look it up and you're like, okay, this, I can't even find this on Google, like what does this mean, you know what I mean? So you do run into things like that, which is pretty funny because you'd think Office 365 would be pretty well documented because it's Microsoft, but
yeah, well that's how they do their AD stuff, like just what is it, like the AD guy, adwizard.com or whatever his name is, and like Just like Microsoft is real big into like they'll make a thing, and then they're like, here's our thing, and they don't tell people like what the impact of it is and could be and like how useful it is. They're just like, here's our thing, we use it. If you want to use it, go forth and use it. Like, they don't actually explain, you know, how useful something really is and be like, okay, you need to take heed, you know, this is like all your AD problems solved. Use this one, you know, policy for whatever. And it, like you said, it ends up being like, you know, you pop a log somewhere or you see an event and you're like, oh, so that's what this means. The only reason you know anything about Windows is by like whatever log it pushed out or whatever error it popped. And you're just like, oh, okay, I know how to look for X or figure out this. But like you said, you can find sparse, if you're lucky, you can find one or two posts about whatever you're trying to figure out. But yeah, a lot of Microsoft stuff is just kind of hidden in like, there's not any documentation out there, and like the people that do it, they do it, and you know, maybe there's just that gap that's too far for like understanding AD is like its own, you know, neither one of us are AD masters, and like understanding Windows AD is like its own, you know, I don't even understand the whole relationship forest trust thing and like how all that crap works. Like I can use the tools, I'm pretty much a skiddy when it comes to anything AD based, but like just understanding how all that works is one of those things. Like I wish I could, like I wish I was that AD wizard guy.com. Like he knows everything about AD, and like that would be to use that for, like to have his brain for pen testing would be like basically having like, you know, knowing everything you would need to know for Windows to like move laterally or escalate or figure out how stuff is working. But
yep.
That's cool.
Definitely with like hybrid Azure stuff nowadays as well. It's kind of like hybrid AD.
Yeah, so we have kind of that mixed approach too. I think we're not 100% 100% Azure, so we have like a hybrid mixed environment, and you know, to go one way or the other, it's too expensive. So we're kind of like doing some stuff, right. Kind of crackerjacky, and just getting logs from that stuff. Trying to look into the Azure events and like you said, just doing like basic stuff, figuring out, you know, what's going on. Mm-hmm. I haven't even looked at, you know, we use Mimecast, so I haven't looked at any of that stuff. Their API is kind of weird and their web interface is kind of weird. And like, there's so many things to look at in that regard, but like there's just no documentation for it. Or if they have an API, you have to build your own, because their API is like total garbage. So, but that's pretty much it. Do you have any other questions or comments?
Questions or comments? I don't know. I guess if folks are interested, I know I get a lot of questions that are like, our analysts are incoming for the blue team. A lot of them are interested to eventually get on the red team, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the hotness, you know, it's the fun job. I mean, to be honest, I'm at heart and in my mind still the pen tester type, right?
Sure.
The breaking stuff type. Definitely, yeah. Not like defense is rewarding when you catch stuff, but it's pretty annoying, to be honest, because you're looking like for needles in the haystack all the time, right? There's a lot of events that happen that just trigger all kinds of noise, and yeah, we do a pretty good job on eliminating that noise, but there's still like you constantly get like all this stuff that you look through, and it's like, okay, to me it's not my thing again.
Yeah.
But it is a like a starting role for a lot of folks in this industry, right? And like a lot of people ask me the question of how do you make the transition or jump to somewhere in basically consulting or internal
SOC.
From SOC to or threat ops to red team / consulting / pen testing, all that good stuff. And I think that's the question I get asked the most. So my recommendation is again, people are like, okay, what should I is there any certs? First, people, you know, the alphabet soup, because alphabet soup is just your, it's like an HR filter, more or less, right, for applying to places. They just like, oh, they prefer this or they want this. So I would say definitely, could you give me 1 sec? I need to take a call real quick. 1 sec. Could you give me 1 moment? I need to grab a package outside. They just called me to pick it up.
No sorry. Problem.
I'll be right back. All right. I am back. Sorry about that.
No problem. We're pretty much kind of wrapping things up.
Cool.
And like, from moving, you know, from the offensive side the defensive side.
Mm-hmm.
The difference there is like, for me, it's like when you're doing the offense, you can kind of do your own thing. You don't have to like talk to another group. Like you're usually kind of on your own, right?
You're a little island.
Yeah. And you can do whatever you want to do, and you don't have to worry about people being like part of the, you know, being a stakeholder in whatever you're doing. Like you just kind of do whatever you do. Whereas you're on the defense side, you come up with a thing, or you come up with an idea or a process or a tool or technology or whatever. You got to sit there and like convince peers and management and other people that that thing is good, or that you should keep working on that thing. And that's kind of frustrating, you know, not to mention you said like the needle in the haystack stuff, but like, you know, trying to get the buy-in, like, hey, you know, I've been using the analogy lately. It's like, you know, like everybody at the table is eating like chicken wings and pizza, and they're all stuffed and they've had plenty to eat and whatever. And I'm come over with like this beautiful salad and like all these healthy foods. And they're like, yeah, I don't want to eat any of that. It's like, I'm full. I'm like, well, I know you're full, but like, this is a beautiful salad. We should probably start talking about, you know, eating some healthy salad with our meals instead of like chicken wings every day and like the mundane stuff that like you're eventually, you know, going to get yourself and others like popped because you're not, you know, focusing on like improving the program and stuff. So it's slow going for me. Like, I think a lot of it is just kind of like future state stuff that I'm trying to build out. And it's frustrating to get like the buy-in from the rest of the group and like peers. And I have to like work extra hard to like tell people and show people, hey, this is the thing. This is the new thing I created that people should care about. Whereas like, if you're doing your own thing, you just get on GitHub and look at it and look at the source code and figure it out and like run it. Like, you don't have to like get anybody's buy-in to like learn a new thing or use a new tool or whatever. Whereas if you want it to be incorporated into the, you know, the blue team process or the SOC, you have to sit there and convince people that, you know, what you're doing is not like that complicated. I mean, a lot of it is just, I've noticed is like people are, you know, confused or don't really understand what I'm trying to do. So they just kind of like, oh, that's Robert doing Robert stuff. I'm not going to try to bother to figure out how he's actually doing it and how useful it could be. So I'm trying to focus more on like just taking a few steps back and being more like more descriptive and slower about people uptaking. So I got, you know, 4 or 5 projects going on. So instead of like trying to explain all 4 or 5 projects, I'm just trying to like be like, okay, let me take the first thing, you know, the first use case that's blatantly obvious and try to like get that passed and get people to understand that and then start working on other stuff. But I struggle because I'm like, oh, I want to what do you call it? I want to correlate this. I want to correlate that. And then I want to launch this with that. And then like, if this happens, I want to do all this stuff. And people are like, what? And start drooling. I'm like, no. Like, I've lost you. So.
Yeah. I think when you're talking to like, even folks in IT, I think it's like, from individual to individual, not everyone like can follow along, especially if you're like more technical. And passionate people tend to be like descriptive, especially with technical things. Like they want to explain to you and be specific about what they're doing, and they use like technical terminology and stuff like that. And that's like sometimes it's just like too fast or too, you know, too low level for whoever you're talking to. But yeah, I was just talking in general for people like interested to hop, you know, from one team to the other. I mean, there's always downsides to each team. Like, I know you said like blue team, you kind of have to play the game of selling your, basically your projects to the stakeholders, not literally selling, but, you know, convincing folks that it's important to do certain things. As a red teamer or a pen tester, yeah, you're more of a free roaming bird, but people usually don't like you around, having you around, quote unquote, when you're a consultant. Not everything. I'm not gonna say everyone, but a good percentage, I think, there is gonna be like, oh, he's either part of the audit or whatever. Like, oh, we need to do this. But there's definitely a lot of companies that are, you know, more interested in having you because they're pretty like excited about certain security stuff, which is kind of cool to see those types of people. But
yeah, you popped in like at like a really good time because before, like when we first started, you know, it was, the stigma was like, oh, the scary hacker guys at the company. And like, you know, everybody was, oh. was scared of, you know, pen testers and red teamers. Now it's just like, you know, it's on the news so much and people are so used to getting, you know, vuln scans and pen tests that like every company's at least had, in theory, some kind of pen test on purpose or not. Like, they understand it's like, you know, pen testing or somebody coming in and doing security stuff is something that you should try to be on board with. I don't know if you've noticed the stigma kind of slowly evaporating to that whole thing, but I've noticed where people are a lot like towards the end of consulting with KPMG, it was kind of like that. You know, a larger percentage of the people you show up on site and they're like, ooh, I've got the hacker. I'm so excited. Like before it was like, I don't know you. Get away from my computers. Like, don't touch anything. And I think now people are like, okay, well, I'd rather you mess with my stuff and figure all my stuff than like China or whoever else is going to come and rummage around my network.
Right. Yeah. For me, I remember everybody's like, oh, you're part of the audit. Like, I don't think I'm an auditor. Like, I am in no way, shape, form, or, you know, whatever auditor. Like, I have nothing to do with audit. Yeah, our report is, like, somehow tied to it, and that's how they always connected us. But since I kind of moved to non-audit-related firm, you know, not accounting, Because the first two jobs that I had, you know, even the one after KPMG was still a consulting firm that was primarily, you know, like
Okay, audit.
advisory and audit. It's like, dude, as soon as I went to somewhere that's just security, like that's their bread and butter and not audit and any of that stuff, clients were so much easier. Like nobody ever said the word audit to me, you know, in terms of when I was testing. It's like, how's the testing going? And like, yeah, that slowly faded away, I think, from my experience in terms of moving from kind of organization where the security, as a, you know, from a service provider organization where you're providing services to others, if the organization is not, you know, security focused, it's, you're kind of the appendix. And I feel like the sort of like what they deal with is kind of like get kind of placed on you a little bit. So, but that kind of wore off over time. And definitely when you're doing, you know, work for just security related work, people are extremely knowledgeable about like, oh, okay, you're doing pen test, cool. Like, you need IPs, you need me to whitelist anything. Like, people are very welcoming nowadays instead of like back in the
Okay.
day. I remember it was kind of very tough to get anything out. Like, and I've learned like, I do my recon beforehand, like before the first meeting, and I like after the first meeting, I just send them like a nice little PDF, be like, here you go, this is like your external stuff, like just confirm it for me. I'm not gonna ask you too much more. And you know, the response rate for that stuff is pretty quick, but like clients will always be clients. So if you're in consulting service, you know, service providers, you're not always gonna get the greatest response times and speeds at
Or
times, but yeah.
you'll send them a list of like target scope and they'll be like, yeah, that's it, that's fine, or whatever. And then it's not, I'm not actually them. Like it'd be like
That
somebody
happens
completely
more
different.
often than usual. Yeah, that happens more often than it should. So always double check your work. But
I've had that happen several times, and you scan something or do whatever it is, and then like, I don't know if I told you the story about that, like where I like pivoted to a computer and it had like all the security stuff on it, and like it was another AD, and I was like rummaging around and I was like dumping, I was trying to crack the what do they call it, the Windows, it's like a different kind of Windows hash,
TDS. Oh.
it's like something two, like I don't know,
TLMV2
I
or
don't know,
NetTIP
it's it was some
W2.
Windows hash that I was trying to hack on, and then I talked to the vendor or the stakeholder guy, and he's like, oh yeah, that's our security vendor, and I was like, oh my God, like my white face turned white and I like started freaking out because I
Dude,
basically I hacked a
I
different com
remember that.
company.
Do you remember whose, you don't remember whose network it was, do you? It was a nuclear facility. That's why they were like freaking out because it was a 2003 box that you popped with MS-08. I remember the call because I was on it. And I think it was Alex with us. Yeah, and Alex was just like, you're not going to believe this. I was like, what? He's like, Robert did this. I was like, what?
And the manager thought it was
Accidentally.
hilarious, and the client thought it was
Yeah.
hilarious. I was like scared
Yeah.
to death. Like,
Dude,
I think.
it was like not intentional. You just like
Sure.
accidentally popped the sock of the like the third party provider sock of the client.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, well, it's on the network. It's in scope, right? Like the
It's
whole
fair
internet.
game. Yep.
Once
Yeah,
it's
dude.
the whole internet is in scope. Once you connect a computer to the internet, right? That's how that works.
I definitely remember that story because I think our manager, was it Richard at the time? Was it, I think. Yeah, he was like, Rob did what?
He was the best because he'd just be like, at one point in time, we did one where we were just like sitting outside of Starbucks waiting for the engagement letter to be signed. And like, he basically told me where to go and like where to show up and what I was doing and what the scope was. And that's all he'd do. It's like, well, how did you convince these people to let me go like full blown McCurdy on them? Like most people, they're like super scared. And I think he was able to just convince them. It's like, yeah, we got this guy Rob, and we'll do some stuff, and wouldn't actually explain like the risk of what I was doing because in the wrong hands, it could become pretty crazy pretty quickly. So like, yeah, he would always get these full blown unhinged McCurdy release the Kraken engagements where it's like, dude, how did you get these people to sign up for like a zero open scope, which is what you wanted, and half the time, that's what you wanted, but
Everybody's, yeah. People restrict a lot of things, and it's like, dude, the attacker's not gonna stop just because you told me to only test this slash 24 when you have these other like 10 networks available. Like, It's yeah, and I definitely remember the full blown McCurdy phrase, because I'm pretty sure either Richard or Alex mentioned that, like, they, you know, he went full blown McCurdy.
Shouldn't go full retard. But yeah, that's the part I miss. You know, the consulting part is doing that type of stuff. But I still tend to find stuff through, like, just playing around with Android, you know, Android games, and just the way people are writing horrible apps again, but they do it for the mobile platform. I don't know if you've looked at any of that stuff, but that's fun to look at over the weekends and during spare time. But yeah, there's always those stories of, you know, like pivoting around or something, getting into something, and lawyers getting involved. I've had one of those once where I was working with a manager, and he just like dropped the mic on like the client in the middle of the first thing and didn't give him a heads up that I had completely owned him sideways. And, you know, lawyers got involved and people were like flipping out, and I was told to like delete everything. And like, so I was like, well, if I delete everything and somebody wants evidence, I'm pretty sure like there's the whole, you know, preservation notice type of thing. So like, if we get sued, and I was told by management and the client to like delete all my stuff, you know, that's probably not the best thing to do. Like, but I did it anyways, just because, you know, the manager told me to, and the client told the manager to. Like, and then I don't know if I told you the story, but like that same client was like, oh yeah, we want another pen test, but don't bring Robert. I was like, that's the best phrase any client has ever given me, where they're like, oh yeah, we want another pen test, but don't send that Robert guy.
No Rob's allowed.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, that's how you know you've created some notoriety, you know? Yeah, I mean, like some clients are just a little uptight about certain things because they don't understand some of the technical aspects. And my least favorite thing is definitely whenever you're on site or doing any kind of external testing, even, is if anything goes wrong, you will always be the first like victim of
phone
like
call.
Blame. Yeah. Yeah, you will, like, anything happens, like, unrelated, you know, meteor hit their freaking headquarters, did you do it? You know, like, that's the first question they ask you, and it's just like, what? I had one, like, that was, I think towards the end of when I was, like, rolling out of consulting. I told them, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to start testing Monday, but, like, I don't specify any time frame. Like, I can start in the evening if I want to, right? 11:59 on Monday p.m., right? Still counts. So I'm kind of loose with my terminology, and apparently during the day there was some kind of freaking network outage, and they're like, stop whatever you're doing. I'm like, I'm eating lunch. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I haven't like touched your network at all with any tools whatsoever. And like, they thought it was me scanning them externally, but apparently it was some ISP issue or whatever that was like causing some kind of outage. And it's just like, it's always you. So just be aware, like, you know, if you're doing this type of stuff, just relax, you know, it's super common, and just be like, okay, this is what I'm doing. I mean, here's proof. I mean, I always kept like a kind of just like a loose log type thing with just like timing is on my IPs and MACs, just to be like, hey, just in case, you know, anybody like, did you ARP spoof something? Like, nope, did not do such thing. So yeah,
that's even if they didn't understand what ARP is and how ARP spoofing even works. That's
gotta have some leaps of faith here that people would understand stuff like that. But yeah, there's definitely run into people that are like, you're a network admin and you don't know like this term. Like, okay, that's like a basic networking term, you know? Like,
it got to where I had like a little everywhere I've ever worked. When people complain about something going down or something not working, I have like a little template that's like, you know, what's the source IP? What is the service? What port is the service running on? Like, when did it happen? Not when Jane came in at 9:30 on a Wednesday and figured out that the service was down. When did the service actually go down? Oh, well, it went down at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and nobody noticed till Wednesday. Okay. Well, that's not when it went down. That's when somebody said it went down. So I had like stipulations in there of like, when did it actually go down? Not when it was reported, but when did the service actually go down? And like, when? And of course, they never give you any of that information. They always like, it's broken and it's not working. And then, you know, you come back a day later and they're like, oh, it's fine. It's, don't worry about it. It's not a problem. It's like, they never tell you the root cause of anything. They're just like, well, it's working now. Move on. I'm like, okay, so either you're stupid and it had nothing to do with me and you don't want to tell me that, or, you know, whatever it is that went away and magically fixed itself. Like most of this stuff does, you know, it's stuff dies and restarts and whatever. And nobody knows why it died, or nobody cares to figure out why it died. They're just like, I don't want it to die again.
Yeah, it's definitely meet some interesting folks. My one favorite statement that I've heard from a client was, they're like, we are experiencing an internal denial of service attack. I was like, say that again. And like, we think there's someone inside the network conducting a DOS. And I'm like, I mean, theoretically possible, correct? Yeah, theoretically possible, but like, I'm pretty sure it's something stupid. And like 2 hours later, like, oh yeah, you were right. It was our core switch going down. It's like, oh,
nice, yeah,
okay.
Because we like, haven't patched it for whatever vulnerability scanner you use in like 18 years. So it like,
yeah,
we sent it a UDP packet with like some weird length, and it like falls over on its face when it gets more than 10 of them.
But it's just amazing that people's first idea not to check like their networking stuff, you know, don't do some traceroute stuff that could easily tell you that, you know, something's dropping, or just if you have some kind of monitoring thing that would tell you like this thing is down, they assume it's the worst and the craziest thing you can think of, or yeah, it's you. So it's like, okay.
Yeah, cool. I have learned to like see some of that side of it, because like a lot of the times the stuff I learn when I've done some management is like just talking to people sometimes is the easier thing to do / the better thing to do. So like, you know, instead of trying to solve people problems with technology, sometimes it is easier to just walk up to somebody and ask them, hey, do you have a problem with this, or, you know, whatever the thing is. It's like, yeah, it's easier for us to use technology to answer questions and like solve problems, but I've learned now to like think about the person part of it, because that's, you know, like I've heard quote like there's no like technical problems. Like all problems are really people problems at the end of the day. It's not really technology that's the problem. It's the person that owns the technology or supports it or whatever has some kind of preconceived something or other that's causing the issue. And it's like half the time it's a people problem and not like technology focused. But good times. But yeah, I appreciate you, and you know, appreciate your time and whatnot.
Yeah, same, man. Anytime you want to ramble or talk about nonsense, count me in.
Yeah, I'm down. If you want to come up with some, like, you know, hacker stories would be something interesting for us to do. I don't remember any of mine. I have some old recordings of ones that I did, but it's been so long now that I don't even remember any of my stories, and they're all kind of outdated now. But people tend to like those. So if you want to write down, like, some little notes for yourself, and if you're interested in doing that, we could definitely do some stories, and it might bring stories up some stories.
Oh man,
yeah, there's
always a lot. You just gotta remember.
Yeah,
dude, I have an archive of like the last 5 years that I can dip into. Just looking at the reports, I can tell you that like
the stories. Yeah.
An example would be during my escalation escapades, some of the passwords that I've seen are definitely some of the best. Like spelling. In Leet, you know, for money signs for S's and stuff like that, balls deep in salsa was still my favorite. That was a SA password for a database in production for one of the clients. I was like, who did this? But whatever. But yeah, from the hacking perspective, yeah, definitely. There's also some blue stuff too, like blue team stories. Like some of the events that we've like discovered were hilarious, like someone's home router getting compromised, and then that stuff was like pinging their corporate network because the guy was on the VPN. So like his home stuff got compromised, and then that resulted in like the corporate network getting hammered, and we're getting the alerts, and we're like, nice. Where is this coming from?
Yeah, nice. But yeah, definitely down for that. I mean, I did like kind of sort of a personal incident response sort of thing for a friend we could talk about. And like I said, like I just have to keep a note of, kind of go through my history and like LinkedIn stuff to keep a note of like what I've been working on, and we can come up with some stories or something to talk about. Cause like I said, I'm always kind of doing something little, something funny or something weird or quirky to play with. It might not be security related, but it's usually something IT related or whatnot. But cool, man. Well, I appreciate it. And, have fun. And I'll send you the final thing before I post it.
Sure.
That way, if you want to listen to it and like say, you know, remove this or add that or whatever, give you a chance to say something.
McCurdy edit 8 out of 10 weird.
Yeah, that's right. Cool, man.
Good, man.
Well, all have right. a good one. Talk to you later.
Thanks for having me, dude.
No problem.
Catch you later.
Bye.
See ya.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.